Now, this week I ran across a really interesting article. It was about the fact that some Americans are changing the way that they're dealing with death, specifically at funerals. The article was first published in the Washington Post on Monday and then was picked up and reprinted in multiple newspapers and websites throughout the week. The original title of the article was The Funeral as We Know It is Becoming a Relic, Just in Time for a Death Boom. But when I ran across the article, it had been retitled, Many Mourners Are Putting Fun in Funeral. Now, right off the bat, I had to wonder if the person who titled it this way understood the contradiction right there in the title. Are they mourners or are they having fun? You know, there's kind of a contradiction of terms there. But what they're saying is that many people are moving away from the somber traditional funeral to try to somehow having a funeral for loved ones that died that include fun, that have a party, that is anything from having comedians to dancing to drinking to destination funerals to all these different things. Now, over the years, I've got to say, I've been involved with a lot of funerals, and many of them have included joy. Many of them have included laughter. I've yet been involved in one that I would say is fun. Over the years, I have been involved in a couple funerals where the person who passed away had left some requests about their service to their family, that they asked that their service would go a certain way, and usually it were certain things that they added that was intended to make it fun. And every time that's happened, I remember meeting with the family as we're planning the service, and they struggled with the request, and they essentially always asked me the same thing. They say, we really want to honor our loved one and the request, but do we really have to do the things that they asked? You know, this seems so inappropriate. It doesn't seem right for a funeral to try to fake it. Because deep down they know that we want to have joy and we want to remember the person, but a funeral isn't something that's fun. And so we always found a creative way to honor the request of the loved one, but yet to honor their and celebrate their life in an appropriate way for the family. Now, I also found it interesting that this article was posted on Easter week. Because here you think about it, Easter is the week that we celebrate the fact that Jesus rose from the dead. We celebrate the fact of the hope we have as believers in the midst of death. And when I read the article, what I found didn't surprise me, and that is that the trend is being primarily driven by the secularization of our culture. Pretty much everyone who are doing this are people that I define themselves as atheists or agnostics. And basically what's happening is there are people that have no spiritual meaning in death, and they're somehow striving to find hope and meaning in the midst of a place that they feel like there is no hope. Now, should it be our goal to make a funeral a happy, fun event? Well, let me make it personal. You know, I think if I were talking to my wife and she's, you know, going to ask me, okay, should we plan fun at the funeral? I mean, I've told her before, I said, when I die, whatever you plan at my funeral, I promise I won't complain. You know, so she could do whatever, you know. But I will tell you, if people really have fun and are happy at my funeral, I don't think that's a really good statement about me. I mean, I don't think that's not a really a positive thing. Because if nothing else, it really means that they're kind of saying, we're better off with him gone than when he was here. No, that's not a time for happiness. And if they're not truly happy, then any attempt to try to make it fun and to make it happy is really, in a sense, an attempt to try to cover up the pain. It's pretending. And I think we can do this even as believers as well. I remember some years ago, in my previous church, there was somebody that several times we'd talk about a funeral, and he would say, you know, my mom died when we were young, and we had multiple siblings. And I remember my dad at the funeral, he had us all wear white because he said that this was a celebration and we were going to celebrate that she was going to heaven. And he had said this several times. And I remember finally after like the third or fourth time he said it, I stopped and I said, well, tell me about that. And I asked him to explain what was going on, and it was interesting. When I asked him, he had talked about it all the time, but suddenly he became quiet, and he became reflective. And he started to talk, and he says, you know, I really appreciate what my dad was trying to teach me, but on the other hand, I was just a young boy. We were young kids, and our mom had just died, and in trying to make it happy, we were denying the fact that this was really painful. It was really scary. And there was a denial that was there. Now, we've got to ask, okay, how are we to look at death? How are we to look at this? As even as believers, as Jesus Christ, as we celebrate on this Easter Sunday, the celebration of Jesus' resurrection. And we're going to look at this this morning in John chapter 11, because it's really a passage where Jesus is dealing with the death of a loved one. Now, we're starting in verse 17. It's in the middle of John 11, so let me just take a moment to kind of sum up, where the story's at. During his lifetime, some of Jesus' closest friends were a family of two sisters, a woman named Martha and one Mary, and then a brother named Lazarus. And in the beginning of John 11, we're told that Lazarus was very sick, and his sisters believed it was a sickness unto death. And out of desperation, they sent a message to Jesus, and hoping that Jesus would be able to get there in time to heal him. They believed he was a great healer. They thought if he got there, then he could prevent their death. Now, without getting into the details of the story, and by the time Jesus arrived at the house of his friends, Lazarus had passed away. He had been dead and in the grave for 4 days. And so that's the context where we come to it. Jesus comes in here, and the first thing we see is that there's a reality of brokenness. If you have your Bibles, starting in verse 17 of John 11, we read, "And when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. And when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house." So Jesus is walking into the city, and as he gets close there, Martha hears that he's there. She runs out to meet him, and this is this house that is consumed by brokenness. And you see in her response, not only her, but even her sister, there's a sense that in this brokenness, there's often a sense of confusion. Look at the response. First, we see in that of Martha. She runs to meet Jesus, verse 21. She says to Jesus, Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And that's pretty much the same greeting that her sister Mary gives. So later on, Martha sends out a message, says to Mary, Jesus is here. And so Mary comes out with her friends, and look at the response, or her response and her greeting in 32. "When Mary had come to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" Now, I think what we see here is that the words reveal what they had been talking about in private. That you have the sense of these two believers who believed who Jesus was, and they believed in his power to heal, and they're sitting there saying, "Why didn't he come earlier? Couldn't he have known? If he really has the mind of God, couldn't he have known that this was happening? If he would have just gotten here earlier, then Lazarus wouldn't have died." Now, on the one hand, it's a statement of faith. They believe that he had the power to heal. But in another sense, it's a statement of doubt. Because they're saying, while we believe he has the power to heal, why didn't he heal? Why didn't he come earlier? Why didn't he act the way that we had hoped and expected? We don't understand it. Why weren't you here earlier so that you could heal him? My friends, the fact is that all of us, when we deal with any period of brokenness in our life, and brokenness is part of all of our lives, that's part of the reality of life, there's a sense that we ask these same questions. God, I believe you could do it, but why didn't you? Why? I've seen you work miracles in the past, but why didn't you hear? If I really believe that you're all-knowing, and if I believe you're all-powerful, and you could do anything, then why? You see, it's natural for us to be confused. And what we've got to realize is that while it's natural, God also at the same time accepts that. He understands it. He doesn't judge us in our struggle. He doesn't beat us up. He says, no, it's okay to ask those questions. Because the fact of the matter is, this side of eternity, we will never know the mind of God. So things will happen that we don't understand. And you see it even here. But what's interesting here is that you see Jesus welcoming their requests, but then you also see his response, which is incredible. Look at verses 32 and 33. I know it's a little later than what we said we were going to study this morning. And 32, we read a moment ago, we saw that Mary heard that Jesus is there, and she's surrounded by her friends. We're told when Mary had come to see Jesus, or where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now look at Jesus' response to Mary. "When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled." Now, at first, when you read this, and I've got to admit, this is the way I've kind of always read it, it sounds like Jesus is deeply moved with compassion, that he's deeply moved emotionally with tenderness. He saw their sadness, and he feels the same kind of grief. However, I've got to tell you, when I studied this more carefully, the two words that he's described here are translated, deeply moved and greatly troubled, neither have the meaning of compassion or empathy. Both of them have the meaning of being upset or disturbed or even angry. So in other words, it's saying what John is telling us is that what Jesus saw angered him. And so we've got to ask, okay, now why in the world is Jesus angry? I've got to be honest, when I looked at this, I'm like, okay, that surprises me. That doesn't seem to fit what I expected. Here you have this picture of grief and sorrow, and why does John tell us that Jesus is disturbed and angry? I think the key to understanding this is to remember that this is right before Jesus. He's coming towards Jerusalem because he's about to enter Jerusalem for the last time. And he knows he's going there to ultimately take up the cross, be crucified for our sins, to die for our sins so that at the cross and then at the grave, he would defeat sin and the final enemy of death. And so why is he angry? I believe it's because he sees death and he's angry with death. You see, death was never a part of God's original plan. That wasn't part of the creation. When God created the Garden of Eden and when he created this place for mankind to live initially, the Garden of Eden was the place of God's perfect design and death wasn't in it. Death was a result of our sin after Adam and Eve turned away from God. So God created this perfect world without death. And we were created for that. And there's a sense that's why death is not only hard when we deal with it, but that's why it's confusing. That's why when we face death, part of us cries out, why? When we face brokenness, part of us cries out, this shouldn't be. This isn't the world I was created for. We know that there's something wrong. People will say, well, death is natural. No, it's not natural. In a sense, it's not the way that it was meant to be. It's part of the broken world, but it's not the world we're created for. And so that's why we have this confusion. That's why we have this frustration. But what's amazing here is that you see that Jesus himself responds this way. The one who created the world looks at this and says, no, I'm angry with this because this is not the way that life was meant to be. And he's overwhelmed by his anger and hatred of sin and the effects of death. But here's what's amazing. While we may look at that and we may get angry and we may become confused and we don't understand, Jesus becomes angry, but his response is totally different. Because we look at his response is that he came to enter into our brokenness and to bring redemption. So remember, he was on his way to Jerusalem to die on the cross. You see, the whole story of the gospel, the whole story of the Bible is about God entering into our brokenness to redeem it. God created a perfect world for us, and then we broke it through our sin. And the rest of the Bible is God entering into that world and pursuing us to redeem, to fix that which was broken. So if you understand the whole story, you know, it's not only Easter, but if you understand the whole story of what Jesus accomplished in his death and resurrection, we see that the whole story is all about him saying, this is not the world we were created for, and how do I redeem it? How do I fix that which is broken to restore the world that you long for? You see, through our sin, we broke our relationship with God, and its side effect is that it broke the world. It brought in death as part of that. Because of our sin, death is now part of that world. But the gospel tells us that Jesus not only grieves over that brokenness, but he then enters into that world. He responds to that brokenness by entering into the world to fix that is broken. So we celebrate on Christmas what? The incarnation. That God came into our brokenness. That God took on human flesh. That he came to experience the brokenness of the world with us. And at the cross, it's not only that he takes our brokenness, he not only takes the effect of our sin, but he takes the root cause of the brokenness. He takes the sin itself. The thing that causes the brokenness. It's not the effect, it's the cause. And he embraces it upon himself, and he takes our sin and the full weight of the brokenness that resulted from that sin, so that he himself became sin and death. And then at the resurrection, what we're told is, in the final part of that story, is that he defeated sin and death. So that whereas he embraced the sin and the death that resulted from it, it didn't defeat him. But when he rose from the grave, it showed that he defeated it. He was greater than the sin and death. That, you know, so that we look at it and you say, he redeems it. He restores and fixes that which is beyond repair. That's the message of Easter. And that's exciting. I want to tell you, we can understand this, but there's still times that we figure out, okay, I believe it. I know it. But do I really believe it? And what we see even here is that we can look at these ideas and affirm them, but there's often a gap that's exposed in a brokenness of whether we know it and whether knowing it is really believing it. Let's go look back to John 11. Look at verse 21. And you see Martha's first words to Jesus. Martha said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. So in a sense, she believes that he has power over sickness. She believes that he could have healed. She believes great things about Jesus. But then she shows even a deeper faith, seemingly, in verse 22. For she says, for even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. Now here it seems to be saying, I know you could have raised him from, you know, healed him and healed him, raised him from his sickness, but even now he's dead. I believe that you can do anything. Which sounds like a great statement of faith, right? But then when you look at the whole context, you see that she's stating the right words, but she really doesn't believe it. Because Jesus, in a couple verses later on, says, you know, I will raise him from the dead. And she's like, well, yeah, you know, I know at the end times you will, but you can't do it now. And then he says, no, I will. And then they, if you go down to verse 39, they go to the tomb, and Jesus says, okay, roll the stone away. And Martha's the first one to say, no, Jesus, don't do that. He's been dead for 4 days. His body's beginning to rot. He smells. And no, don't do that. See, she says the right words, but she really doesn't believe it. And what we've got to realize is that I think what we're seeing here with Martha is something that is common for all of us. See, it's real easy on an Easter Sunday to come and to say the words, to believe the thoughts, to believe, in a sense, the theology. But deep down, it's hard for us to really believe it and apply it to our own lives. We might say what Martha said, Jesus, if you would have been here, you could have done that, but this is too much for you. You see, I interact with people all the time that say different things. Sometimes it's even, you know, even about sin. Well, Jesus, I know you could have done that, but you don't know what I'm guilty of. I'll talk to people that are believers that have accepted Christ, or people that say, oh, I could never come to Christ because you don't know where I failed. And there's such a sense of shame that, oh, you could forgive that kind of sin, but you can never forgive me. You know, no, what I feel like is it... Like, forgiving my sins, like raising the dead. You can heal the sick, you can't raise the dead. And what we have to realize is that if you're here today, if that's what you really believe, there might be some of you might be saying, no, I think he can do anything, but deep down, you can't forgive yourself, and therefore you can't accept God's forgiveness. I want you to hear the fact that Jesus is saying, we have a God that can raise the dead. We have a God that can forgive everything. There isn't a sin that is here that is beyond God's grace. And you might have the right theology and the wrong beliefs, and I'm challenging this morning to embrace the right beliefs, to believe, actually put in place what you say you believe. Or other times there may be things that we look at it and we say, you know, boy, I've got this idea, you know, it's this gap between our theology and our belief, and it's our sin, or sometimes it's, I've got this problem in life, and Jesus, I think you can handle this, but I've got this huge thing and you can't handle that. Again, he's sick, I think you could handle that, but I don't think you can handle death. And again, what you've got to realize that, again, we've got to realize that God is a God of resurrection, and his resurrection power is at work in our lives. And so he can heal dead marriages. He can heal dead relationships. He can heal relationships where there's such an anger, such a coldness that you think, I could never get beyond that. There are people that are dealing with the weight of abuse. You've been sexually abused. You've been scarred, and you think, I can never get beyond that. I want you to realize that what we're talking about is there's resurrection power, that if he can raise people from the dead, there isn't anything that he cannot heal. Do you believe that? I'm not just asking, do you have the right theology? The gap is normal. What I want you to realize is that what Jesus is saying is when we look at Easter, That's the thing that should hopefully help us close this gap between the theology of what I say I believe and my real beliefs of how I apply that to my own life. Do you understand what Easter means? Are you willing to apply that to your own life? The great news of Easter is it helps us to close that gap. Because in Easter, we see that there's a power of hope that transcends, that conquers brokenness. Again, look at verse 25. Jesus said to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. If, when you look at this, you've got to say, there's something that he means here that we sometimes miss. When he says, I am the resurrection, what he's trying to say is, to her, this is for you. I've been raised for you. And he's not saying, I will be resurrected, though he will be. And he's not saying, I will show you that one day when you die, you will be resurrected. Although, if you're a believer, that's also true, and it's an incredible truth. He's saying, I am the resurrection. I am your resurrection. I am the way that anyone gets resurrected. I've been raised for you. And it's not just describing an event. It's describing who he is. It's not an event in the past, nor is it an event we look forward to the future. It's a reality of who he is that if we understand it, that should transform the way that we view life, past, present, and future. The fact is it's the foundation of our faith that's saying that yes, it means that we will be raised again for who are believers. That yes, death is not the final enemy, that we look at this and there is hope, but it means more than that. It means that there's resurrection power that should course through our life in the here and now. In Colossians chapter 2, look at what Paul says about this. He says, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him in faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. That in the same way that when baptism, we go down and then we come up and we're raised with him, that same power that raised Jesus from the dead should course through us so that we now have life that we never had before. That there's healing and that there's a reality that we never realized. Now, there's two aspects of this, even in this verse. Again, look at verse 25 and 26. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Now, I want you to see there's two things. The first is he talks about there's a resurrection after death. He that who believes in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And what he's saying is, what I want you to realize is that even though if somebody dies, yet shall he live. Why? Because Jesus defeated death. And there is hope again for believers. That when, yes, you know, there is still sadness, it's not joyful or happy, but there is joy. Because we know that when a believer dies, that we're released from the limitations, the pain, the brokenness of this world. That a believer now, that we are absent in the body and present with the Lord. That's a reality. That life is radically different because I know I'm an eternal being. And there's a hope. And it's not just something that I hope happens and I'm not sure of. It's a hope that I'm certain will happen because Jesus Christ in his resurrection proved he has that power. So if he raised himself from the dead, he also has the power to raise all who follow after him. What a great truth. But that's not the only power that it shows us. See, it's not only a power of resurrection power after death, there's a resurrection power in this life. Look at verse 26. He says, everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Here's what I want you to remember. We talked about a few minutes ago this idea that when we were created, God created us for Eden, this perfect world without sin and death. But when man sinned, we brought sin and death into that perfect world. It broke the perfection of God's creation. And not only did we break it by bringing physical death, but in breaking our relationship with God, what the Bible teaches is it broke every aspect of the world. Every aspect, so that we live in a broken world, a broken creation. Nothing works the way that it was designed for. So yes, there are times at funerals that we cry out and say, this is wrong, this shouldn't be. But all of us do that, not only at funerals, not only in death. How many times do we go through life and we face things that are wrong, that we just know that shouldn't be, and we cry out, this is wrong, this shouldn't be. Life shouldn't be this way. And we cry out in despair because that's the reality of life. If this is at all a question, all you have to do is to look at the huge problem that they talk about in our culture with this incredible expansion of what they say, deaths of despair, people dying from addictions and from overdose and from suicide. And because we live in a world that, although we have great prosperity, we have all the things going for us, people are becoming more and more lonely and desperate. Because all the things that the world promises that will answer the problem or the big questions of life don't. And when Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life," he is saying that he not only came to conquer the brokenness of death, but he also came to conquer the brokenness of life. When we celebrate that he defeated sin and death, we celebrate that he defeated sin that separates us from God and the death that comes from that, both physical and temporal. That if we have a restored relationship with God, it restores everything. We celebrate that ultimately Jesus Christ, yes, will resurrect our souls and our bodies after death, but also that he will not only give us eternal life in heaven, but he will give us life even now. That he will begin the process of restoring what was broken so that he offers resurrection to all who are, though physically living, maybe are just trying to get through death. That he brings resurrection to dead marriages and dead relationships, to dead, those who are dead in hope, to people that have no meaning. See, if you even start in the beginning, we talked about this movement of putting fun back in funerals. And really, as we saw, it's just an empty attempt by people in the world who have no meaning, somehow trying to deny the finality and the pain of death and trying to force meaning where there is none. But when you understand everything that Jesus is teaching here, what we see is, and then we think about our culture. See, we're not just trying to put fun back in funerals. We're trying to somehow squeeze fun and meaning into life where there is none. And people are desperate. And it's not only that Jesus brings redemption into what the meaning of death, he brings redemption into the meaning of life. He gives us meaning and purpose. Yes, we live in a desperate culture because the further we get away from God, the further we get away from what we were created for. Do you understand that the whole Bible is a story that God loves you, that God created you, that God created you for a relationship with him, that God created you for Eden? And if part of your soul cries out in the brokenness of the world, this isn't what it should be. It's God's reminder of what you're created for. And God's invitation, will you come back to that relationship where I can restore? Because again, the further you get from me and the more you get in the world, the more you're gonna not find answers in the world, you're gonna find the brokenness of the world. And so when Jesus said in this passage, "I am the resurrection and the life, he who believes in me, though he is dead, will never die. And he who believes in me, though he lives, or though he dead, will come alive. And though he lives, will never die." And then the question is, do you believe? Do you believe? You see, Easter is a story, the whole of the Bible is a story of God pursuing us in relationship with him. It's a story of his pursuit and his victory, and also of his invitation to that relationship. And so he calls you today, do you believe? Do you trust in me? We accept his offer of grace, of forgiveness through what he accomplished at the cross and the victory he won over the grave. That you would know the forgiveness of sins, that you would know restoration of relationship with God, that you would know the restoration, the redemption of the life that you were created for. I invite you to that today. Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions about what we talked about, Jesus Christ, our church, or anything else, connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or by email. We'd love to hear from you.